Welcome to Book Spectrum. I'm your host, Chris Cordani. On Book Spectrum, we highlight both seasoned and new authors who are not necessarily writers by trade. They come from varied occupations across the spectrum. Have you ever come across major crime stories where at times the detectives are so stumped they consult with a local psychic? Some of these psychic detectives have become very important arms of police investigative departments, and they have produced results. Who, however, are these gifted people, and how are they able to use their abilities to help solve major crimes? I have with me one of them, Nancy Orlin Weber, who wrote a book about her experiences titled The Life of a Psychic Detective. Welcome to Book Spectrum, Nancy.
Oh, thank you, Chris. I am honored to be here and speak with you.
Well, I'm happy to have you here, too. When did you learn you had psychic abilities?
I never called it that for many, many years. I was born with it, and it was simply I knew the secrets that were trying to be kept secret in family, friends, and I would know it as if they told me. But I never labeled it for many years.
I'm meaning, when did you know you had that kind of ability, though? Was it something that you discovered as a kid and you either tried to figure out what you had, or you knew what you had and you knew what you could do with it?
I wasn't sure what to call it when I was young. So by age 10, I wrote a thesis in the sixth grade on the history of the insane asylums. I knew I was different from my family and my friends, because they showed that to me by their responses. So I didn't have a label, right? It's called, can I backpedal fast enough from Nancy in her mouth?
What did the teacher do? Call your parents and say, I think I'm a little worried about Nancy. While everybody else was doing dissertations on history and George Washington and things like that, Nancy does the history of insane asylums.
Right. Well, that went with a lot of things and then a lot of understanding of seeing death before it happened, knowing who was going to live, who wasn't. That was common for me. I didn't label it. Nobody did. It wasn't until I got into nursing that I realized something's going on that isn't the usual big time, but I don't know what to call it yet. At 19, I had a new admission when I was a young nurse, and the doctor gives me the order. I look at it, and I look at the new admission. I look at my doctor's orders, and I go to the doctor. He doesn't have a heart problem. I don't know why you wrote that. He's got, go do an upper GI. So he did, and he comes back and says, how did you know? I said, because I can see it. Don't you? Because I had no clue that people in medical fields could not feel what's going on, could not either see it or feel it or sense it. I had always done that. It wasn't until I got into nursing and psychiatry that was a very avant-garde at the time place, acute psychotics in South Bronx, that I discovered what a gift this is.
I suppose you had quite a few doctors when asked about how you knew these things saying, hey, I'm a doctor, not a psychic.
No. Actually, no. They all loved it. They honored it. They respected it. In fact, it's how I learned that it was my soul and that it was a sacred gift, because I was able to help release suffering. I had healing touch. I didn't know. I didn't call it that. But I could lay hands on patients and they would write letters back to me telling me they had not felt so good in so long. So all of it combined until I got into psychiatry, where I could see behind the hallucinations what the fear was and what the trauma was. I could see it, literally. And I would jump up and tell them, and they would connect with me. And within 10 days, they were not dysfunctional any longer after years of dysfunction. So I was offered the top post of research in psychiatry in New York State. I turned it down, opened up an office as a psychic. And in 1980, after 5 years, 6 years of working as a medical intuitive psychic animal communicator, the police came calling. And that's what the book is all about. All the cases that are adjudicated that I worked on. And it's been a wild ride.
You're saying, Nancy, and I have with me on Book Spectrum, Nancy Orland Weber, the author of Life of a Psychic Detective, you were sought out by the law enforcement community. You were sought out by police detectives rather than coming in and saying, hey, I know something about this case. I can help you.
Correct.
Talk about that initial contact.
My son was taking karate. We had just moved to Bud Lake, New Jersey. And the karate instructor, unbeknownst to me, was a police officer. And she asked me at the end of the session, apparently somebody did an article on my work. And she asked me if I ever worked with the police. I said, why? She said, well, there was a rape murder. And I had a flash of an image of a man. So I described what I saw. And she said, would you speak to my superior officer? And the next week at karate school, he was there. And he asked me again, and I gave him the same. And he said, I'd like to come over tomorrow and talk with you with my partner. So they did. And he said, would you please repeat it? And I'm thinking, what's going on? And so I tell them again. And they look at me and say, we have a problem with your description. I said, what's your problem? And, you know, I suspend all thought and all comments about it. And they said, well, we have two men answering that description. As soon as I heard that, I jumped up. I have to tell you the funny part, Chris. I think I was mad. I don't know why. I stood up and I limped across the room, then sat back down. I said, no, you don't. And they said, how did you know one had a limp? I said, it's simple. I became him. Now, part of me, Nancy, the Nancy I know all my life, goes, oh, my God, no wonder you wrote about the history of the insane asylum. And so they went back and told this one with the limp that they had an eyewitness see him rape and murder her. He fully confessed. And that was one of many afterwards.
Naturally, there are going to be some skeptics who are listening to this particular program. That's understandable because people aren't in the position you are, and people aren't the position of those who have witnessed your skills. When it comes to psychics and those of them with their abilities to find missing people or help solve murders, your book has, in fact, been endorsed by law enforcement leaders, and that's something that every reader should know, and that really does say something.
Thank you, Chris. Yes. Most of those who endorsed it, I am still very close to. And their families. And I'm also a minister, and Bill Hughes, whose name is on the front and has done a lot of the TV documentaries with me, is a very close friend. And his grandbaby, I did the baby blessing. That's how close we are. It's been a marvelous ride with them.
I know this could be very difficult to explain in detail, but give our listeners a chance to maybe see these things through your eyes. How do you, or what's your process when it comes to answering a question or trying to find a murder suspect or trying to find somebody who's missing or trying to solve a crime in one or two different ways as a psychic?
Have you ever lost any item that you felt you just misplaced? You know, when you're frantic, you can't find a single thing. You get, I know me, I could get frozen in fear without a GPS in a car. Well, I'll never find my way out that way. In the same way, I learned that we all get the energetic fields of the universe. We all get all this flow of wisdom and knowledge from our creator. Call it whatever you want, that source, that divine, God, whatever words you use. We all get it. As we do, it enters into the body-mind. And we can't grasp all of it. It's overload. However, if we're focused with our intention, with our desire to make a difference on our own life or others, and we're not emotional at that moment, because emotions have a very different chemistry than calm, just placed, you know, like meditation, peaceful, those of us who can get there, yay. But even if we can't, just that calm, like a placid lake without any idea about what I should do, could do, would do, can I do it, etc. Putting it all away, I learned that's how I control it. Without that control, it just comes in, and sometimes we can grasp some, like I did with the rape murder. I wasn't thinking, oh my God, a rape and murder. And so I learned that suspend all emotions, quiet down, make no preconception about whether I can do something, can't do it, because I never know, Chris. Chris, I have no clue what I can do until I do it.
Nancy, are there any particular cases, and I understand if you can't really go in depth on all of them, but are there any particular ones that satisfied you more than others?
Yes, because most of them have sad endings, right? And those sad endings never go away. I always say the retired, whether it's a federal agency I work with or locals or national, whatever, when they retire, they fish, golf, or become people who do cold cases, and they never forget. In the same way, I've seen hundreds, and I never forget. But the case that has the sweetest ending in that way was when a woman listened to me on a radio show, and she called her daughter, and her daughter called me. Apparently, she had been a victim of severe violent domestic abuse for a long time. She finally got a divorce and full custody of her children after her own lawyer was convicted of drugs, etc., and had her tossed out of her own home and had her ex-husband in the house with the kids. She finally got everything cleared out. The day the court came down, her ex-husband abducted the three children, and this is back in the early 80s. So think no computers, no cell phones, and many police departments, state by state, did not talk to the other states well. They all, too much ego, I'll call it. Some of them did, some didn't. And they would put it at the bottom because it wasn't a felony. But President Carter had just signed the bill making it a felony, and it was not tested yet. And so she came to my door with the sheriff's investigator, Lou Masterbone. And he happened to have been trained by the top person in the country at the time on missing people. He had worked for Interpol, Dick Rufino. Amazing human being, and John Walsh went to him when Adam was missing. So here's his protege. And he said, I don't believe in any of this. I said, good. You mentioned skeptics, Chris. I love skeptics because I'm a skeptic. Give me proof. Don't give me, you're intuitive, or I know I'm intuitive, or whatever. Oh, what's your proof? I write everything down. So he comes up, we work, and at that time, I looked at him and I said, I don't know why, but I get Texas. And I get this truck, I describe it, and I go into details. And he goes, where? I said, I don't know. It's a funny name, Euless. Euless, Texas? Is there a Euless, Texas, I asked. And so we had to get an encyclopedia, but he's looking at me peculiar. And he said, yeah, we know he went there. I said, how do you know? He said, well, we traced something. I don't remember. And then we got there, he said, and they were gone. I said, okay. And then they had to leave. And they come back. And this goes on for weeks and weeks and months. And so one night, we're sitting there. And he said, okay, you're getting California. I said, yes, he's in California. I could smell the beach. It's an East Street, it's called, I think, as I recall now. And I'm describing everything except the name of the town. Do it. And he said, I need a name. California's a big state. I said, I know, but I have no clue. Well, I had a rescue dog. I rescued a lot of animals at the time, and she was one of them. And I named her Ramona because I love that name. And Ramona was asleep on my feet. And I'm looking, and I'm so tired, and I was so worn out 4 hours into this. And all of a sudden, Ramona looks up, and I go, Ramona, thinking she needs something. And Lou goes, Ramona, California? I look at Ramona, I look at him, and I go, yeah, Ramona, California. Good night. I just want to go sleep. It was Ramona, California. It actually existed. And so when we found out, it took weeks before the police would go there in California because there was no money from here to fly out. And so they went there, and he had just moved to Hawaii because the neighbor knew. And so Lou Masterbone goes to the judge and says, I need a bench warrant for Honolulu, Hawaii against the guy's name. And the judge looks at him and says, how do you know? He said, well, I'm working with the psychic, and she told me. And the judge said, you trust her? And Lou said, absolutely. He said, you got it. And that was the first bench warrant issued for a felony for a parental abduction in the state of New Jersey, maybe in the country. And mom calls me and says, are we really going to see my children? I said, yes, this is Monday. You're going to see them on Friday at 4 o'clock under an arch. They're going to come right out. Friday, 4 o'clock under an arch in Children's Services. They came out into her arms, and her mom, the one who started it from the phone call, called me. We all cried. And that's my favorite case.
After all the really tragic endings to some of these, it's nice to see people happy and hugging at the end of a long case.
So good. Yes.
Nancy Orlin Weber, The Life of a Psychic Detective is her book. And she's with me on Book Spectrum. I'm Chris Cordani, your host. This book is not just about your life as a psychic detective, Nancy. Even though that's what the title indicates, but you offer people ways to unleash some of their own abilities and talents intuitively to help themselves.
I think it's the most important thing I can do. I know I'm not alone in being able to do things. I know that it takes, not everybody wants to be a psychic detective, nor should they. It's not always, it's certainly not fun. However, I think everybody needs to own their own sacred gifts. Everybody's got them, because the word psychic actually comes from the root word meaning soul in Greek. So we're all souls. And if we don't let our souls lead the way in our lives, it's not going to be as easy or comfortable, at least, in finding solutions when you see an issue, a challenge, a problem, go through a crisis. So I wrote that partly just cathartically about this is what a psychic detective does. But all those, as you say, for everybody else, many of them have taken the exercises and formed many groups and go ahead and practice. Because in the practice of trusting oneself, we heal all the broken trusts. We move forward instead of being stuck. And that was the thrust I've always done. In that book and anything I write or say, I find the most important part is we have to help everybody on this planet be whole, complete, fulfilled, spiritually in love with their life, have deep roots on the earth where we respect the earth and big wings so that we can lift ourselves up in hard times and we can help others. And that I so appreciate what you said, Chris. Thank you.
Nancy, most people, the vast majority of people, don't have the gift that you have. But your book does delve into the idea that people have, and as you said, their own gifts and talents, but their own intuitive abilities, their own ways to find things on their own, or their own ways to learn to use those talents. Maybe it is to find a missing item, but also maybe to connect with others a lot better.
I hope so. I'm smiling because my favorite line is a Da Vinci statement in a letter he wrote back to someone when they said, how do you do everything you do? And he said, everything is connected to everything. So if we treat every living being of any kind truly as part of the family, the whole family, life's family, then I look at it when you talk about intuition, I think, intuition is part of the right brain faculties, and the negative side of that is fear-driven. So do I want to be intuitive driven or fear driven? That's a choice. And then I look around at the gifts everyone has. You have multiple gifts. You already know them because you use them. Do you treat them like they are your gifts? Art, beautiful paintings, filmmaking, actors, actresses, singers. Oh, but the woman who has cleaned my place when I needed it desperately, she was using her gifts because she was kind and compassionate and sweet and made me feel so comfortable with her presence. That's a gift. So if we instead look at everything we do as either sacred or no passion, no liking, anger, resentment at having to do, that's the world of being thrilled at life or not. So yeah, I think everybody does have them.
Nancy, in the book, The Life of a Psychic Detective, you also stress the great importance of trusting one's own first impressions. I'm the kind of person who goes to trivia nights and writes down what I think is right. Then maybe last second I change it and, well, winds up that the first answer was the right one. That happens to me quite a bit. That's the simplest level. But the fact is,
no.
People don't trust their first impressions. I'm a variables guy. I understand they're not always going to be right, but they are still an important factor to the overall truth, are they not?
1,000%. Because you just said it. Even in test taking in school, forget, the first answer is usually the right answer. You change it, it's because you're insecure about, do I know something or don't I? And so I always say it doesn't matter. Take the first answer no matter what in everything, because that has no editing. That doesn't have what I think of as the finger in your face, the negative imprints that we may have from ourselves and others over time. Anyway, and so, yes, it's the first impression. For instance, I always think, well, let's say my first impression is there's something about someone that threw me off, but I don't know what. It's going to put an antenna up to watch out for that. And I think that matters, to notice that. And when we don't, and I've learned it the hard way for sure, over time, yet I learned it. So now it is a way to restore trust where it's broken inside us. Trust yourself, even if you're wrong. I love what you just said. It is so clear.
Nancy, your website is nancyorlinweber.com. I'm looking at it right now, but that's not going to help anybody listening to the Book Spectrum audio podcast. Tell our listeners what they can find on the site.
They can find the current workshops that I have, starting one in December, one in January, one in February, a description of them in classes. I do a lot of one-to-one mentoring, which is one of my favorite things, that and workshops. I love education, and I love watching other people get it and say, oh, I didn't know that for me. And yet it's so easy once they get it. So for me, that website I made hoping that people understand, if they look at the blogs, they get some lessons, but most of all, to trust themselves I always think of it as fusion, not fission. So the books can be signed copies there, and Amazon has them also, either way. And just some other sprinklings of information that I give, and there's a press room kit there people can read. Right now, that's about it there, I think.
Nancy Orlin Weber, thank you very much for being with us on Book Spectrum.
Chris Cordani, thank you. This has been so great. Thank you.
The book is titled The Life of a Psychic Detective, but it's so much more and really could help you out too. It's not going to get you out there to solve crimes or anything, but it might help you find your own gifts, and they don't have to be psychic gifts, and learn to develop and enhance those and make your lives a lot better. Check it out. Again, the book is The Life of a Psychic Detective. The website, nancyorlinweber.com. You can find a link to pick up her book on that website. And you can also find it on our website, bookspectrum.com. I'm Chris Cordani. Thank you for listening.